Rima Sango Show on 702. Streaming on the Prime Media Plus app.
Let's walk the talk.
Mr. Dinesh Govender is my guest, Chief Executive Officer and an Executive Director of Discovery Vitality. We talk about the relationship between healthy lifestyle in all of its variations and all of its permutations and your mind, your psychology. Joins me now on the line. Dinesh, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
It's great to be on your show, Aubrey. Thanks very much for having me.
So I suppose a lot of people would say, duh, of course there is a good relationship or healthier lifestyle is obviously going to facilitate for great psychology. But I suppose mine is to ask the question, how do we make that link definitively? How do we say that in a way that is bolstered by the kind of study that you guys commissioned with the London School of Economics, Dinesh?
It's a great question, Aubrey, and your duh is well recognized. I told the CEO of South Africa, Discovery South Africa, Hilton Kallner, before I joined here, that I'm going to, after Adrian announced it in London on Tuesday morning, I'm now going on to the Aubrey show to actually tell people that if they walk more, they will be healthy, they will live longer, healthier lives. And he laughed at me because I think this is why the work we do at Discovery and Vitality is so important, is because while people know this instinctively, intuitively, it is very difficult to get people moving. In fact, all the indicators in the opposite direction. So Discovery is doing a lot of work on everything from just, sort of shining a light on it, doing detailed research to actually prove the correlation, release research on it. And that's what this is about. I'll talk about just now, all the way to actually creating incentives to get people off the couch.
Yeah.
So this research we released on Tuesday morning, where Discovery, together with the London School of Economics, did research on 1 million Vitality members. And this is the type of stuff that it's actually quite difficult to do outside of a system as unique as Discovery's. So a million people between our South African operation and our UK operation, because we can measure through their wearable devices and their phones, Vitality members are always engaged, and we're always able to tell, are they moving? What are they exercising and doing, etc.? And we monitored them for 10 years. And the reason we did this was to figure out how do people form habits? Because there's people in our program who are great at exercising, and there's people who are on the couch.
Yeah.
And, what does it take to form a habit? Because people often in January will say they want to run a 5K.
Yeah.
And then, you check in with them 5 weeks later and they're back on the couch. So what the research we've done shows is, what is the best way to form this habit? What increases your chance of forming a healthy habit, and what impact does that have on your lifestyle? On your sort of why to do this. And let me start with the why, because I think that's an important starting point. Is it will increase your lifespan, it will increase your health span, which is your years of healthy life. So what we proved through the research is that just walking 5,000 steps 3 times a week can add 2.5 years to your life if you're male, 3 years to your life if you're female. And what was really powerful was that, normally this is around young people getting into exercise, but it was proved definitively that the older you are, the higher the impact of getting you to move. So while you're more, the risk of your of death reduces by 27% across the population by getting people to do exercise at least 3 times a week, if you're over 65, your risk of death drops by 52%.
Yeah.
So actually, the older you are, it's never too. I think the key thing in the research was it's never too late, and even a small amount of steps added to your days makes a big difference. So that's sort of the why behind what we were doing.
I was going to say, one of the biggest sort of challenges in the world at the moment is to close that knowing doing gap. We know, and as I said earlier on, and I think you corroborated that, we intuitively understand that if we are more active, if we are fitter, if we are well physically, that there is the dividend of a better psychological life. We know this. I think that we there's enough data. I think that there is enough intuition. There's enough history to be able to corroborate that very, very unassailable fact. The issue here is, as you are putting it to me now, is how do we close the gap between knowing and doing what we ought to be doing in order for us to reap the benefits, to get that return on investment, is what you're saying to me, yeah?
Absolutely. So I think that's where this research was different. Now, we've been, Discovery's 32 years old and Vitality's 27 years old. And we've been publishing these types of research around the link between exercise and mortality, exercise and reduced risk of depression, it's sort of, you know, healthy eating and improved health for years. The difference with this was around, and how do you do it? How do you make that link? Because what typically happens is people have, there's a few things that are in their way. The first is an optimism bias. People assume they're in better health than they are.
Yeah.
The second is, and this one's quite powerful, is hyperbolic discounting, which is, you know, something today is given disproportionate value over something in the future. So even though you know good health when you're old is really, really important and actually priceless, that ice cream today is just, it's in the present. It's so good.
Yes.
It is so good. So what we keep doing at Vitality is trying to figure out how do you trick the brain with some immediate rewards today, coffee, smoothies, flights, right? To get you to do stuff that's actually good for you in the long term.
Yeah.
But the research was less about the incentives this time and much more about how do you get them to develop habits? Because we've got an active rewards program where we give you a personal goal saying, you've never exercised before, you know, do 5,000 steps once a week. You exercise a lot. You need to do 3 runs this week. Yeah. So that personalization is important. The habit formation, research we did here was quite profound. It showed a few things. I think the first thing it showed was, well, as we've said, healthy habits can change lives, but really that it's never too late to start. But I think what was important for us was just how do you form that habit? And we saw that it takes 7 to 15 weeks to form a new habit. Now, that's quite a broad range, but this is what the data say. Because some people, so for some people, it's going to be 21 days.
Yeah.
But for most people, and we're talking about like 80% of people who formed a new habit. We looked at people who were on the couch and who formed a new habit in exercise. Then we saw people who were walking who formed a new running habit. And we saw that 7 to 15 weeks, the sweet spot is around sort of 9 to 10 weeks. But the first part of the research was around, this is how many weeks you need to stay at it. But what I thought was more helpful is the concept of habit laddering, which is, and it's how do you form a habit which is independent of a goal. Let's say you start the year and your New Year's resolution is, I want to run 5 kilometers, and you hang out on the couch. You're not a big walker either.
Yeah.
And you say you want to run 5 kilometers.
Yeah.
Setting that goal is not bad, but trying to run 5 kilometers in week one and week two is something that's probably unachievable for you, and you're going to stop. So what we've seen is, set a practical goal. Set your first habit at a practical level, like 5,000 steps 3 times a week.
Yeah.
For almost anyone except someone who's got real issues real physical issues, doing 5,000 steps 3 times a week is entirely achievable for most of the population, irrespective of your weight and your health and your age. Now, if you set yourself that simple goal of 5,000 steps 3 times a week, and by the way, you don't need fancy devices. Any smartphone can track your steps. So you put it in your pocket, you do 5,000 steps 3 times a week. If you did that for 10 weeks, there's a very high chance that you formed a new habit, yeah, and you will do this almost automatically going forward.
Yeah.
That's where the habit laddering comes in. Do 5,000 steps 3 times a week. Then you can add intensity. So you can say 10,000 steps or 7,500 steps, or you can add frequency, saying, I want to do 5,000 steps every single day. And so that's the concept of habit laddering. Set your first habit goal at a very achievable level and just stick with it for 10 weeks. And once you've hit it, increase the frequency or increase the intensity. And that there is, it's been proven through our research, is what it takes to form a strong, good habit.
And that would be all good habits that are about wellness, because I mean, part of the items that we probably add when we speak about wellness, we speak, of course, of physical exercise, but social interaction is one of the things that came up. Time in nature, meditation, came up. Is the same sort of formula true for those kinds of activities?
It is, and there's actually some other good research that showed up. So while we focused the press releases and the discussions around steps, because we really wanted to get people moving, we found that good habits are expensive. So you do one good habit, and actually it's very easy to take on a new one. So we found that everyone who took up walking, you know, there's a good chance that either take up running or they'd end up with a healthier diet as well on the back of that. Yeah. So once you're doing one good habit, you can do the other. Habit formation is absolutely applicable to anything. Unfortunately, it's probably also applicable to bad habits. Like watching watching a 3-hour movie every single day.
Yeah,
I think you could develop. So we have to be careful, but for meditation, for meeting your friends, if you develop a regular habit with your friends around talking to them, just meeting up, I think, you know, that's something that sticks versus saying, I'm going to be spontaneous. Spontaneity is great, but you will see them less often.
Yeah.
It's the same with meditation. We found it to work really well with eating habits as well. And there I've got a personal story around this, which is, you know, I'm not a salad eater.
Yeah.
And, and chicken's a salad. But even then I'd like much rather, you know, my habit would be to order the chicken with chips. But this year my wife decided we're eating salad and, we started small.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the side and it was at the front of the meal. And, you know, but I promise you, we started that in January. And right now I look for the salad when we sit down for dinner. It's quite remarkable because that is not something that has ever happened before. So it was quite fortuitous. I'm reading our research findings. I'm like, I can feel this in my own life.
Yeah.
The same things happened with my mom. So I got my, we got my mom, last year, we got my mom an Apple Watch. We got my father-in-law a Garmin wearable, and both of them have sort of, you know, in their own devices started taking up walking. And at the beginning, it felt quite novel. And I saw my mom early today and she, you know, she remarked about how now she does 5,000 steps regularly.
Wow.
And it's not something, and she's, you know, she's 70 and it's not something that she's monitored or thought about before in her life. And yet there it is now. So it's never too late, and it applies to nutrition, it applies to physical activity, it applies to socializing, and watch out because it can also apply to developing bad habits.
Absolutely. I think that things like reading, as opposed to scrolling, on various social media platforms, is a habit that one could actually try and activate in the same way that you've talked about the other sort of activities there. So there's the data, there is the rationale, there is the study, there's the empirical stuff that corroborates what most of us would say. Yeah, we know that. Talk to me about the link between those good habits and psychological wellness.
So we've done, and we didn't do it in this research in particular, but we've done it in previous research, which was around if you're exercising regularly, you can reduce your risk of depression, quite substantially. We had most data. This was a South African study we did at Vitality, together with Discovery Health. And we found that by upping your exercise from whatever level it is, from like zero exercise to little or from moderate to high, and in all of those situations, we found that the risk of developing depression was substantially reduced. So we've seen this time and again. I think, you know, for those who've read about blue zones in the world, or who've read about or watched the Netflix series on it, on Living to 100, the social element is massive. And a lot of that has to do with sort of going for walks with friends and stuff like that. So from a psychological perspective, you know, exercise releases endorphins, which are great for you. You know, eating less sort of unhealthy processed foods and more whole foods, is generally good for your overall blood glucose levels and maintaining a positive mood, versus creating mood spikes, which can be detrimental in the medium, in the short and in the long term. So the link between exercise and good nutrition and good mental health is very, very strong. In fact, the more and more, and it feels to the point, just like your original duh, It feels more, you know, you can't tell someone who's going through depression, go for a walk.
Yeah.
But when they're not feeling depressed, you should absolutely like suggest going for a walk with them, because the more they go for a walk, the more they're exercising in general, generally higher moods and lower chances of them falling into a state of depression or anxiety.
Now, you spoke earlier of your own personal testimony around experiences, with good habits. I've struggled with depression, and I've found that moving is a great help with regards to dealing with depression and depressive episodes in one's life. And I suppose it brings in the question that I've been dying to ask since we first started our conversation. The big conversation around mental wellness always vacillates between the idea that it is a chemical, physiological issue, or it is an existential issue about spiritual sort of the big existential spiritual questions, the big philosophical questions. And I'm not sure whether that question has been clearly answered. So there are those who hold the very, very strong opinion that it is about a chemical imbalance in the brain or somewhere in the body, and that is the problem. Then there are those who have the worldview, as far as depression is concerned, that it is about the existential stuff, the philosophical stuff. Where do you guys stand on that debate? And I'd be interested to hear your response as it pertains to the good habits that you and I were talking about that we need to cultivate in order to live a healthier life.
So listen, I think it's a fantastic question. I'm glad I didn't study medicine or theology, so I can't talk with any sense of expertise on this. But I will tell you. We'll tell you this about the good habits and how it helps. It's the same as when it comes to, let's go to another controversial topic, BMI and obesity, right? People being overweight. It's different to the other chronic conditions that lead to really high risk factors for people. And the reason it's different to high blood pressure or high cholesterol or anything else is because people can see you. And, you know, so there's a visible and almost a shameful or judging element, even if it's not happening, there's all of these, social connotations to it that create all sorts of issues. Also, and we know this, you'll see someone who eats, you know, unhealthily and yet is not overweight or obese. Yep. And you'll see someone who's trying really, really hard for years and is. So it's very clear that there's stuff going on besides your behavior. Very, very clear. So I guess my take on this, Aubrey, is, you know, when it comes to mental well-being, everyone's on a spectrum, the way everyone is on a spectrum for the likelihood of being obese or getting high blood pressure, etc. And whether that's genetics, whether that's chemical, whether that's existential, any one person is somewhere on that spectrum their propensity to develop a mental well-being condition or develop obesity or develop high blood pressure. The good habits will shift you from wherever you are. It's not about where you are relative to someone else, but what the science has proven
relative
time and time
yourself,
again is
relative.
And I think this is, if you just think about humanity in general, if we all just like sort of say, I'm here, this is who I am, and I know that if I go for a walk every day, I will be better than I am today. Versus comparing yourself to, I'm generally a very optimistic person. Mm-hmm. So, if you go for a walk, so if you're generally pessimistic, I'm generally optimistic. If you walk every day and I skip walking for a month, I promise you, I'll probably still be more optimistic than you. But if you go for a walk every day, you will be more optimistic or in a better mental state than you would have been if you had not gone.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that you say to yourself who you are.
Regardless of what worldview you have about the causes of mental illness, right? Those good habits are going to have a positive impact on your mental wellness, regardless of whether you see it as a physiological issue or an existential philosophical issue.
Absolutely.
So ultimately, whatever school of thought you belong to in regard to that, taking the time to develop the good habits is going to be a plus for you. It's going to be a win for you, regardless of what your worldview is about where and the why fors of mental health. Give us a call, 011-883-0702. My guest is Dinesh Govender, Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director at Discovery Vitality. You might be listening to this conversation and going, duh. but maybe it's an important duh. Maybe it's an important duh in that we are really closing the gap between what we intuitively know, what we perhaps know through conventional colloquial wisdom, right? To actually understanding what are the building blocks of that knowledge, of that intuition. And we also understanding that all of those good habits, regardless of how you understand mental wellness, whether you see it as a chemical, physiological phenomenon, or whether you see it as an existential, philosophical phenomenon. The reality is that with those good habits are going to stand you in good stead. Give us a call. Have you found that your mental wellness has improved because you've adopted those good habits that we've been talking about? Whether it is good nutrition, whether it is exercise, whether it is avoidance of substance abuse. Have you developed any of those habits, and have you seen the dividends that come with it, not only of a physical nature, but also of a psychological nature? Please give me a call. I'd love to hear from you on 011-883-0702. Does the data corroborate this theory, Dinesh?
I can't say more than what I've said already on it, I think, Aubrey, yeah. Which is, you know, sort of that sort of exercise definitely plays a role in reducing sort of risk of mental well-being. I would say that, you know, often when people are not in a good space, you know, and it's gone to the point where I see memes about this nowadays, which is, you know, I'm feeling really down and I don't know why. And people say, well, did you go for a walk? And you're like, no. Did you speak with your friends and family? No. Did you get some sunshine? No. You know, what have you been doing all day? I've just been, you know, lying in bed, you know, scrolling through social media, but I don't know why I'm feeling down today. So yeah. I think back to your point about people knowing, I think, you know, that's important. One of the things that's important, because just a point I wanted to make, Aubrey, because you were talking about the duh on this. Yeah. If coming out of this conversation today, there's just a few more of your listeners who now notice that they can track their steps on their smartphone, on their Apple Health app or their S Health app on an Android device, or on their watches, and just start being conscious to how many steps they're doing. I think that's already the huge progress. That's what we're trying to do. I mean, we had a look at the where we did an estimate for everyone in Discovery Health Medical Scheme and said, you know, we know who's not walking at all and who's walking a little bit. We said if we took everyone who wasn't, you know, who wasn't walking, got at least half of them to do 5,000 steps, and we got everyone who was walking 5,000 steps to do it three times a week, we'd save 6 billion rands in healthcare costs. So, you know, there's the individual impact that it has on a member who's going to live a longer and or healthier life, But there's also sort of the collective impact on a country's healthcare costs.
Sure.
Whether it's a medical scheme, whether it's sort of national health insurance, it will save the country money if more people were moving. Unfortunate thing is 27% of adults are not physically active enough,
yeah.
and that number is closer to 80% when it comes to kids. So it's something we're really trying to make a difference.
And we're dealing with this whole obesity reality in South Africa now that is becoming a serious nightmare, Dinesh. I absolutely agree with you. I want to read you some of the messages that are coming through. We've got lots of calls coming through on the telephone lines. Tulani M says, "Hi, Bro Aubrey. I usually go jogging every week after work, and it really helps. And I feel guilty whenever I don't do it," says Tulani M there. Very interesting, the guilt factor there, I suppose, from a mental wellness perspective. We'll talk a little bit about that. But I'd also like to hear from you as we have this conversation. What have you done to develop the habit? Right? So, again, there's a duh moment there that, yeah, we know that we need to develop good habits. But I'm interested to hear from you as you listen to the conversation that Dinesh and I are having. What did you do to develop the habit? Yeah, to develop the habit to the point where, perhaps like Tulani, if you don't do it, there are pangs of guilt. I suppose it's a good guilt because, you know, it means that you're doing something positive. But I'm interested to hear your thoughts about that. Let's go to the lines, Dinesh, shall we?
Sure.
Thomas is in Cape Town. Good evening, Thomas.
Good evening, gents. Nice discussion. I've been a Vitality member for many, many years.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking a bit earlier about depression. So I've got bipolar disorder, which characteristic is quite deep depression. And just Aubrey, on one of the points you made around existentialism versus chemical, I actually see it differently. I see it for me, it's about chemical versus circumstantial.
So
am I upset because my dog died and I got fired from work and I had a car accident, or am I just upset because I woke up that way and there's no reason? Then it's more, yes, ultimately there are chemicals that affect the circumstantial, but do I put it down to some circumstance,
yes,
or am I putting it down? I have to take medication, but the one big game changer for me was getting involved in cold water swimming, which is a big thing in Cape Town, by the way. And there is a hell of a lot of reading that I've done around the medical effects of cold water swimming. So there's things like you get an endorphin rush, which you get with any exercise.
Right.
You get into cold water, you get adrenaline. There's something called the vagus nerve, which gets stimulated. There's a diving reflex, which reduces your blood pressure. There's a hell of a lot. You get a cocktail of natural drugs,
yeah,
from taking this exercise. We're all junkies in the cold water swimming community,
right,
doing all this. But it's my psychiatrist has said there's nothing that I do that he's given me from a drug perspective that has been better than what cold water swimming exercise, yeah, has done for me.
Yeah, yeah. Thomas, so, great, yes, call, man. Excellent call. Thanks very much for that. Dinesh?
So it's interesting. What Thomas has said and Tulani said is quite fascinating and inspiring.
Yeah.
I think that's why we've gone to basics with the research around walking, is because, you know, we've always gone with, okay, you at this age, you need to do this much cardio and this much strength. And if those words and those exercises, I mean, we've got hundreds of thousands of members at gyms in South Africa, Aubrey, and that is fantastic and good for them. But some people don't like gym.
Yeah.
And I can promise you, Thomas, Thomas has found the research to corroborate something that he loves doing. And
yeah,
what we're trying to do with this research and everything else is say, even a little improvement is great, and it's never too late. Find what you would keep you physically active,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Whether it's running, and I love that Tulani sounds like he's addicted to running. That's,
yeah,
a great addiction.
Yeah.
But, you know, addicted to running. Thomas is cold water swimming, and I promise you, someone else with bipolar disorder who absolutely hates cold water swimming but loves cycling would find great benefit in cycling. So it's as long as people are finding activities that they will continue to develop a habit around. I'm terrible in the water. I hate swimming.
Yeah.
Like, I've tried it a few times and I could never generate a habit in it for me personally. Whereas running and stationary bikes work very well for me. That's where I've ended up.
I loved what Thomas said about the physical reasons versus the circumstantial. Wonderful stuff. Very, very, very cool. Let's speak to Bui in Dobsonville. Hi, Bui.
Hi, Aubrey. How are you?
I'm very well, Bui. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm a runner. I'm not a long-distance runner, but I love running.
Yeah.
So I work very far. I get home very late, 6:30 to 7:00. So it used to work for me between autumn, you know, summer and spring. So now since it's autumn, it gets dark very quick.
Yes.
So I used to run and cover my 10 steps, and I'd be so excited, and that pumps up my endorphins. Yeah. So I'm in a good mood. So now what I do, I get off very, very far, use public transport. So I don't get off from the normal bus stops. I would just get off very, very far so that I'm able to cover my steps.
Yeah.
So, you know, taking steps, the achievement of finally, you know, covering my steps, it pumps up my endorphin. I'm happy. It's like my antidepressant. I suffer from a lot from insomnia. So just being exhausted, I'm able to get my good night's sleep. So really taking steps, there's so many benefits. As I've covered endorphins, covered antidepressant, and I'm able to sleep the whole night. So really, people are missing out.
I'm really loving the fact that you use your sort of day-to-day practical experiences and you splice them and you add them into your exercise routine. I love the fact that instead of getting off the taxi closer to where you're going, you'll get off a little bit further so that you can do that walk. I think that's so brilliant. And I think what it does is that it just gives you a sense of presence, right? That you're really involved in who you are, and really, really, really involved in how you are. You know, it really sounds brilliant. What I want to find out is how did you develop the habit, Bui?
As I mentioned, endorphins, the happy feeling that I feel after accomplishing, steps and just running, the sound of birds, the sound of kids on the road, just seeing the air, the fresh air. Also, there are a lot of benefits. It's something that I really love. If anyone could take that away from me, I think I will just maybe.
Oh, wow. I hear you, man. I hear you. We in Dobsonville, thanks very much for that call. I mean, that's great. I mean, I think this is so creative and so excellent, eh, Dinesh?
It's fantastic. I love Bui's language around she loves running.
Yep.
I was interested to figure out when she started, because developing the habit for something where you start loving it can be truly life-changing. What she's done was interesting, and I think people should apply their minds to that. I mean, I definitely do, because, you know, there's a few barriers to developing these habits. It's easy to talk about, but we all have, you know, people are busy with everything around them, with careers, with kids, with parents to take care of, with all sorts of other issues. And, you know, arriving home late, you're taking public transport. So Bui found an innovative way of thinking about it. But how do you find the time in your day for something that works? Now, some people are lucky. So if you work at Discovery in Sandton, there's a running track on the roof. So my COO will, in between two very stressful meetings, will, you know, he's got his gym bag and he'll duck upstairs and be back down for the next meeting, sweaty, but much in a much better mood, right? So you can find it in your day if you've got the right structures around you, or you've got to be innovative like what Bui's done, which is, I'm going to get off a few stops earlier.
Yeah.
It's, you know, for someone who does no walking, it's those little tricks that you often read about, like, you know, at the shopping mall, park further away from the entrance. So I think we need to think creatively around how we create the space to add more steps, or to create the space to exercise, or to create the space to think about healthier meals or meditation.
Yeah.
Because no habit's going to be formed if you can't find the time and the energy to actually invest for the first few weeks to develop that habit.
The gurus of presence, and I'm sure you're aware of the whole conversation around being more present, being more aware of the present moment, very often talk about the fact that if you are in touch with your body, what your body is doing now at this very moment, if you can feel the tingling of the tips of your fingers, it really brings you into the present moment. And I think that the awareness, the focus, and you mentioned it earlier on, the awareness of how many steps have I done today, is a great way of bringing us into the present and away from the anxiety of what's going to happen in the future and the depression of what's happened in the past. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we during COVID, remember, we're a program that sends people into gyms and rewards them with flights and movies.
Yeah.
All of those were shut down. We actually spent a lot of time creating little videos and tips on our website around how to meditate, how to get a good night's sleep, and I think the meditation and sort of the mindfulness, more than meditation, but mindfulness enabled people to be more present and calmer in a period of absolute panic around the world. Yeah. And it's one of the things we actually got centered ourselves on, during that period. I think, getting people to be more present is definitely important. We see it with people getting more distracted with social media and everything else that's happening in the world around them. We're bombarded with information. And I think you're spot on to highlight the importance of being present.
Yeah. Mark is in Kriersdorp. Hi, Mark.
Kriersdorp, Aubrey, good evening to you.
Yeah,
I don't know if you remember me. I spoke to you many years ago when you assisted on the afternoon show.
Yeah.
And I was organizing a walk, with 702 Walk the Talk for an organization called Blind SA.
Right.
Egoli Blind. I was then visually impaired.
Yes.
I've now lost my vision, hopefully temporarily, due to a corneal graft because I've got multiple myeloma cancer, which I'm having treatment for.
Yeah.
And I walk virtually every afternoon with a guy that drives me, Samson. Mm-hmm. He grabs the stick. I got the stick. And there we go. We do about basically a 4K route.
Wow.
And what your guest said resonates with me as well. I've got a stationary bike. Obviously, I can't go on the road.
Sure.
I spend 20 minutes a day on that bike as well. So what Mr. Governor is saying in terms of bike and walking, the two just resonate with me. And I think this is an excellent conversation. I think it takes one out of one's, depressive state because what I'm going through is not an easy situation at the moment, but getting through it. So, yeah.
Mark,
excellent discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, man, I just love your courage, and your just the positivity of it all, even though you're going through a storm in your life. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
Much appreciated. Dinesh? Hello, Dinesh.
Mark, I agree with you on just how inspiring it was to listen to Mark. Yeah. I think Mark raises an important point, which Aubrey, you and I haven't touched on yet, which is just the importance of just being selfless and how that lifts spirits.
Yep.
Being present around your body and how you're feeling is one thing, but being sort of self-obsessed is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And, even when Mark referred to, when his sight was better and he was reaching out to you for the walk the talk, he was raising funds for Blind SA. And you can see he sounds much more positive than fully able-bodied people. Yep. And I think that's is inspiring that he looks, you could hear in his voice how he enjoys his cycling and he enjoys his walking and how he enjoys the companionship that Samson brings to his walks.
Absolutely. Listen, this has been a great conversation. When Tadeng, my producer, was telling me about it, I thought, yeah, all right, here we go. But this has been a really deep, sagacious conversation. And how do people get in touch with you, Dinesh? What are the programs that we can expect from Vitality going forward in this regard?
So I think with Vitality in general, you can check our website, follow us on social media. If you want to hear the unfiltered me, I'm on Twitter as Dinesh Govender. But that one, my LinkedIn profile is very well behaved. My Twitter profile is a little bit naughty. But in terms of what we're doing, we're expanding the ways in which we create exercise and nutrition opportunities in a big way. The exercise opportunities, as I mentioned, gym, I mentioned wearable devices that we discount, but we just opened up paddle courts to our members to give them discounted access. We're opening up sort of access to more yoga and CrossFit and Pilates studios in the future. And later this year, we actually add on a new nutrition partner in Checkers and Checkers 6060, which hopefully gets even more people discounted access to healthy food items. So there's many things we're trying to do to get people to eat healthier, to get people to move more and overall just make them healthier.
Dinesh Govender, Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director of Discovery Vitality.